Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to your one-stop shop for horror news, true crime, and real-life tales of the unexplained, Monsters at Midnight, The Revenge. Episodes of Monsters upload on a bi-weekly format every other Saturday. I'm your host, your favorite escape madman, loose on the airwaves, terrorizing your eardrums, Matt Schaefer. Today we ask the question, is the slasher genre dead, or has it simply changed shape? So, lock your doors, bolt your windows, and turn out the lights. Monsters at Midnight, The Motherfucking Revenge rides again. I asked myself this question earlier today because I was really just sort of contemplating how many slasher movies I have seen in the theaters. And I'm talking true slasher movies. Movies that are distinguished by a killer, often anonymous or masked or mysterious, stalking and stabbing young people. The formula that we've known for going on 50 years now. The answer is quite low, actually. Not many true slasher movies have I seen in the theaters, new releases. Obviously, there have been some, but it was interesting to me to think about how many of them are reboots or legacy sequels or continuations of series that were pre-established. Because the number of new modern twists or just interpretations of the slasher genre that I've seen is low. So it led me to think, is the slasher genre dead? And that's not true. The answer is no. The slasher genre is not dead. However, I do think that the slasher genre has become subject to an incredibly different rebirth and reinterpretation. To understand that, you kind of have to go all the way back to the beginning. So, it's history lesson time. The history of the slasher movie. In 1960, a little movie made by Alfred Hitchcock was released entitled Psycho. If you are unaware, somehow, if you've made it this far listening to a horror movie podcast, if you are unaware, Psycho is one of the most famous and best, we'll call it a horror film, even though by today's standards it's more of a thriller than anything else. It's one of the most famous and successful and best horror films ever made. Incidentally, featuring two different scenes of a person being stabbed to death in these elaborate, iconic death set pieces. 1960 is also an interesting year because the British film Peeping Tom was released, which was all about voyeuristic camera work, because the killer's weapon in that movie is literally a blade mounted to the foot of a tripod so he can film his victim's final moments. Now, obviously, both of these movies were subject to an immense amount of controversy at the time. It was, like, too graphic, lurid. A lot of the press at the time called these movies pornographic due to the almost fetishistic nature in which these murders are committed in these films, and just caused upright outrage. However, this year is monumental for what we would eventually come to know as the slasher genre. Would I call either of those films slasher movies? No, most definitely not. They do not have nearly enough of the trappings of the genre that we've come to know, but it's definitely where the seeds were planted for where we would go in the future. So let's flash forward into the 70s, the early 70s. Italy is making a big name for themselves with their giallo films. If you are unaware, a giallo film, the word giallo translates to yellow. And this is because giallo films were really inspired by these super lurid, pulpy detective novels that were hallmarked by their, like, garish, yellow covers. And they were sort of murder mysteries where the whole goal was to, like, try and figure out who the killer is before the characters do by the last page. What characterized these movies, especially with the works of Lucio Fulci and Dario Argento early in their career, was the decadent, nightmarish, operatic portrayals of violence in these movies, often with bladed instruments. Again, wouldn't necessarily call giallo films slasher movies, although they do have elements to them, especially given the fact that there is a mystery element to all of them. The whole idea, the point of the movie being that it is a murder mystery that needs to be solved, most of the time by potential victims or characters who are in proximity to the victims. Which leads us to our next monumental year, 1974. Once again, two big important movies for what we would come to know as the slasher movie, and that is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Black Christmas. Now, I've talked ad nauseum at Black Christmas in my Black Christmas Old versus New versus Newer episode, but I don't know how much I truly mentioned this movie was important in spearheading the slasher genre, because almost all of the trappings are in the movie. Voyeuristic POV, killer perspective camera work, stalking young women, and a mysterious killer whose identity we do not know. Black Christmas is also well known for being an adaptation of the Babysitter and the Killer in Upstairs story that we would later see in a movie called When a Stranger Calls, which is super famous for an incredible first 15 minutes, but then becomes one of the most boring movies ever made. But the bigger deal of the year that I feel, cinematography-wise and pacing-wise and atmosphere and mood-wise, Black Christmas is super important, but the bigger watershed moment for what would we come to know as the slasher genre is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The idea of a group of teenagers, vulnerable, alone, away from any possible adult help or authority figures, being terrorized by lunatics, and also sort of gave us one of our first icons of horror movies, one of our first, like, I mean, one for slasher movies, I should say, because before Texas Chainsaw Massacre, horror movie icons were like the Universal Monsters, the Frankenstein Monster, Dracula, the Wolfman, etc. This was our first icon of horror that was a human being and a serial killer, and that being, of course, Leatherface, and also extending to the Sawyer family as a whole. And that's also an important distinguation. Distinguishing factor to make is that typically the enemy, the villain in a slasher movie is human, or at least has a human figure. It's not a supernatural monster. It's not something created in a lab. It's not a werewolf. It's not something. It's not a haunted house looking ass motherfucker. So Black Christmas and Texas Chainsaw Massacre were our first big looks at, like, real people, real fucked up people, real human being serial killers. And also with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the connection going back to Ed Gein was also important, as that mirrored the loose connection to Ed Gein that Psycho had as well. Oh, a bug flew in my water. You gotta be fucking kidding me. Oh, well. It's fruit fly season. Make sure you're taking your trash out regularly. I've just derailed this entire episode, but that's fine. I cannot get this bug out of my water. Alright, I guess I'm done drinking water. Flash forward a few more years. A young filmmaker named John Carpenter is tasked with creating a horror movie centered around the stalking of babysitters. What was initially pitched as the Babysitter Murders would become the film that we know, Halloween, which pretty much writes the book, or not necessarily writes the book, but takes all of these notions of what a slasher movie is and puts them into one vehicle that becomes super successful and super important in the public eye of cinema. Now, with this also comes more controversy. This theory that I've never taken real stock in, this idea of, like, a moralistic punishment figure in the, like, being showcased in the guise of a movie monster, of a serial killer, where these young kids who are smoking pot or drinking or having premarital sex are going to be published by this Christianic, like, reaper figure that we will then see much more of as we go on past Halloween. I've never taken any stock in that, just because the core fundamentals of the slasher movie is it has to be about young people, and it has to be in a situation where help is not readily available to them. And in Halloween, it's just the fact that all the parents are gone because they're babysitters, and it's on Halloween night where any lunatic can wear a mask. And what do these people do, these young people do, when there are no authority figures? Well, of course they party, of course they drink, of course they have a good time. So I've never really taken any stock in the fact that slasher movies make some sort of moral statement on young people, young women especially, as we will go along. So, Halloween comes out, becomes a sleeper hit, becomes, for the longest time, like one of the highest grossing independent film of all time, until I think actually Pulp Fiction dethroned that, but I could be mistaken. And another young filmmaker named Sean S. Cunningham calls up his good friend Victor Miller, who's a writer, and says, "This Halloween movie is making a lot of money, we should rip it off." So Victor Miller goes to see Halloween and basically says what I just said. You get a bunch of teenagers who are all randy, as he puts it, and you take away authority figures and you pick them off one by one. And then our next big tentpole in 1980, a little movie called Friday the 13th is released. And from there, the early 80s, just non-stop slasher movie releases. It's like every week there is a new slasher movie being released, because other young, struggling filmmakers realize you can make these movies for dirt cheap, and they will turn an incredible profit because people inherently enjoy thrill rides. They enjoy horror movies. They enjoy being scared. I don't enjoy you walking on my keyboard, sir. This is great content here for you. I hope you're still listening. And this is also when we get into the moralistic arguments that have pervaded the slasher genre for a long, long time, and that's the idea of women in peril and minority representation. And while there is a lot of truth to some of these things, I still don't buy a whole lot of stock in it. I will say that the minority representation is problematic, just from a representation stance in general. I've never really agreed with this conceit that, like, the minority dies first. I've very rarely seen it happen where, like, the minority dies first. Do they often make it to the end of the movie? No. And that is true, and that does suck. But, given that this is a history lesson, you've got to look at this thing through the lens of the 1980s. It is truly being marketed to white audiences because they are... It is a difficult time in America where, like, you have Reaganomics and basically, like, demonizing anything that isn't white and perfect in suburban America. So these movies are being made through the lens of white America. And even, like, Italian horror films and other foreign, even Canadian horror films that were coming out are taking place and being filmed in America because they wanted to reach the biggest possible demographic, which is white suburban America. Does that excuse a lot of this? No, it absolutely does not. But that is just the way that it was. The women in peril thing, I get to an extent, but... And I don't know, I'm a dumb man, but I don't think it's ever necessarily been portrayed as damagingly as a lot of people says it has been, because you look at these movies that were coming out, just flooding out after the release of Friday the 13th, and all of the final survivors, the ones that can, like, outwit the killer and survive the movie, are women. And whether that's an attack on, like, female sexuality or female independence or intelligence, I think is beside the point, because it's just, from a mechanical structure, it makes sense to have a big, burly, scary dude chase after a significantly smaller woman, because that's just the mechanics of fear in a horror movie. And a lot of them were coming out. I cannot stress to you how many slasher movies were coming out. From movies that you have heard of, like Happy Birthday to Me and Prom Night, to movies you may not have heard of, like He Knows When You're Alone and stuff like that. Just so many movies coming out, to the point where the genre is almost like already becoming subject to parody and reinvention by 1983, 1984. Movies like The Slumber Party Massacre, which were pitched as a straight parody of the genre, but were sort of reworked into a more straightforward slasher movie, and movies like Saturday the 14th, until eventually you have the entire Nightmare on Elm Street series, where the first one, being pretty serious, is still very cartoonish and over the top until they almost become horror comedies. And so that's... where was I going with that? So basically, we were rapidly, like, within 2 years of the decade, approaching burnout on the slasher movie genre. If 2 years, because the fake-out opening of Brian De Palma's Blowout is making fun of the slasher movie industry, and that movie came out in 1981. So, that leads us into the 90s, where the slasher movie is pretty genuinely dismissed as, like, a dead genre, until, with the meta-commentary and the self-aware jokes of Scream, sort of revitalizes it in 1996. And then when we have what I like to call the teeny bopper slasher movies, where whether or not they're rated R still feel a lot more sterile than what was coming out in the 80s, because you got movies like I Know What You Did Last Summer and stuff like that, where basically if you have a poster of a bunch of 20-something-year-olds like posed together in like a bluish sort of color tinting, that's what I consider a teeny bopper slasher movie. And slasher movies did continue for a while into the 2000s. You had movies like Jeepers Creepers and stuff like that, even though Jeepers Creepers, I guess, isn't really technically a slasher movie. But then it kind of laid dormant again as this new craze of like hard exploitation and gore porn movies had their burst to the scene with Saw and Hostel. And then you start seeing a lot of remakes of traditional slasher movies. Nightmare on Elm Street got a remake. Friday the 13th got a remake. Halloween got a remake. And even movies that aren't considered slasher movies, like The Hills Have Eyes and The Fog and all that. Everything got a remake. So for the longest time, it begged the question, like, where is the slasher genre going from here? And the interesting thing is, barring the reboots and legacy sequels and stuff like that, it is kind of worked itself into this formula where it is acknowledging the mistakes of the past and trying to be more prevalent or like societally relevant. I don't want to say woke, but I guess I'll just say woke in today's climate. So you have movies like Happy Death Day. You have movies like Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. You have movies like Freaky. To the point where movies that come out like Terrifier and X are classified as throwback movies because they are so unapologetically of a different time. Especially Terrifier. Like, Jesus Christ, that movie. Jesus. So you have all these movies kind of filing into two camps. And that is this new era of the slasher movie, the retooling, and then you have the throwbacks. And it's an interesting place to be in, because you can kind of get whatever you want out of the genre now. I think it's cool that there's a lot more representation for minorities and people of, like, on the LGBTQ spectrum and stuff like that. There's a lot of different ideas and toying with different tropes of the genre, such as the case of, like, Freaky, which I thought was super cool and a lot of fun and a good twist on the slasher genre. And then you also sort of get the sort of art house stuff that A24 is putting out, like Bodies, 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 which is more of a run-of-the-mill slasher, but still with this snooty nose up in the air, like, oh, but we're not like your old slasher movies, so, like, we're gonna be a hip new slasher movie. It is funny to me, I was looking up modern slasher movies earlier, and a list I found, it was like, top whatever slasher movies to watch for the, modern slashers to watch for this Halloween. Most of them are from the franchises that are still going, like the new Halloween trilogy, and the new Scream movies, and what, there was something else, I forget. Oh yeah, and like the Wrong Turn remake, which I didn't even know Wrong Turn was old enough to be remade, but whatever. It's an interesting place to see the slasher movie be in. It will never be as predominant or as formulaic or as just in your face as it was in the early 80s, because it just can't be. It was a zeitgeist that will never be capitalized on the same way again. However, with studios like Blumhouse, there is still a business market for making low-budget films that can turn a huge profit, which Blumhouse smartly does, regardless of the quality of the movies they're putting out. It's an interesting time for slasher movies, and I also think it's in its infancy. I would like to see how this sort of retooling of the slasher genre goes on into the coming years, and I will also like to see what sort of gross, violent throwbacks we get as well. So let me know what your thoughts are on the slasher movie genre and whether you think it has any footing in today's climate. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and you can shoot us a DM there. Alternatively, you can email us at monsters@midnight@gmail.com. Our YouTube channel is up and running, sort of. I need to get back on that Let's Play, the Monster Plays that I started, but you can subscribe and follow us there as well. I am also on Letterboxd at letterboxd.com/MattFlamingo. I try to write about every movie I see, so if you want your thoughts on non-horror films, you can head over there and give me a follow as well. Until next time, my tender lumplings, don't drink, don't do drugs, don't have sex, and you just might survive.